Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva, and today we'll continue our series on hospital-acquired conditions with Rick Beaver, Senior Consultant Director at Vizient. We're going to cover our battle against those conditions. Rick, welcome back.
Tom, thanks. I appreciate it and glad to be back.
So today let's talk about preventing catheter-associated urinary tract infections, or CAUTIs. So I'm going to ask you point blank, Rick, are we placing just way too many urinary catheters in patients, or are we just keeping them too long?
Great question. And there's a two-part answer to that. So first, in the time frame between 2017 and 2020, CAUTI was the second fastest improving infection out of the five infections that are measured in the HAQ score. So C. difficile improved 39% over that three-year period. CAUTI reduced 28%. And what I was finding in literature, the main reason for the reduction in CAUTI has been mentioned, and what I've observed is when hospitals have a good Foley removal practice. And the key to that practice is an autonomous nursing-driven Foley removal practice that includes urinary retention protocols that allows nurses to use some of the great new products. And nurses tell me how much they like them, like the straight cath, the condom catheter, the flower, and several other products that has really made it easier for them to try to get patients to void. And so when you combine allowing nurses several more hours to try to get patients to void and using ultrasound bladder scanners, the combination of those three things has really reduced the number of Foleys being used by hospitals. But the second part of it, there are many hospitals that are asking us to come in and help them with CAUTI reduction that aren't getting the national average of 28% reduction over those 3 years. And so what we find is we'll take a look at the number of patients that have a Foley and divide it by their adult census to come up with a percent. And what we find is hospitals, even academic medical centers, are able to achieve as low as a 15% ratio. And in some cases, some of the small to medium-sized hospitals are able to achieve an 8 to 12% ratio. And we're going into some hospitals where they have a 20 to 30% ratio. So as soon as we see their numbers on our first day in, we immediately know the amount of opportunity for getting the Foley out. And what we say is no Foley, no infection. So that would be the first thing that we work on.
Rick, in 20 years of practicing hospital medicine, sometimes I didn't even know who placed the Foley. Is that still a problem going on in our country?
Well, there's a great article, and it's called The Lost Line. And what it talks about is if a line is placed in surgery, whether it's a central line or now we're talking about a Foley, and if at the time of transfer, let's say they go to the critical care unit, and if they're being transferred from critical care to the floors, we say that that is a critical point in the likelihood for a line to be removed, Foley or central line. So we look at building an S-bar handoff so that if I'm the receiving nurse, I would be asking the question, why is the urinary catheter still in place? And give me the reason. And then I evaluate the reason. Does it match a required reason for a catheter to remain in place? If it doesn't seem to be, then we either ask, can you remove the catheter before I take the patient? Or if the conversation shows that the catheter could be removed, that nurse, once she or he gets the patient on the floor, can then initiate, if they have it, the autonomous nurse-driven protocol to remove the catheter. If it's a patient that is in the restricted cases that don't allow the autonomous protocol to go, then a nurse can carry it right to the attending physician or hospitalist to have a discussion, or can be done in multidisciplinary rounds on the floor to make sure that they keep an eye on that Foley. But what we find is whatever leaves the critical care unit, it's that much more difficult to get that catheter removed from the patient. So that is a critical juncture that we make sure we focus.
Is this a more common issue with men versus that of women?
You know, that's a great question. And I was just asked by one of our engaging hospitals. And I said, one of the things that I haven't done was measured the number of patients that have catheters longer than they should based on a clinical assessment. I haven't looked at whether they were men or women. What we do is just assess the patient and look at the guidelines and look at the reasons for the Foley to currently be in. And so we were dealing just with the case and not whether they were men or women. So that's one thing that I promised myself in this next engagement that I'm starting to see if there's a Foley removal issue to see the percent of men versus women. So thanks for the challenge on that one. And I hope the next time I talk with you, I'll be able to have that information.
I'll definitely follow up with our listeners. So what are some common causes of caries? We've already discussed that some cases because we keep them longer or we shouldn't place them, but what are some other issues?
Yeah, that's another great question. So no line, no infection. The second one would be it's the perineal care. So you have some patients that are immobilized because of, let's say, spinal injury or spinal surgery. And so when we observe patients being bathed, they'll pay attention to the arms and the back and the chest and the legs. But then the perineum care, where the catheter is located, unfortunately, is left somewhat unattended. And so what we've done was started working with some vendors, some manufacturers of products that allow to have extra perineal care without moving the patient. And there are some spray products that are being used for issues like that. But also what we find is if they're not an immobilized patient, everybody is trying to do CHG baths of patients. There's one product that provides, I think, 6 wipes, and they say one for one arm, one for the other arm, one for each of the legs, one for the chest, and one for the back. Well, again, we're dealing with the perineum, where the catheter is located. And if you look at the infecting organisms that are gut-related organisms, is there a way to pay more attention there? And so some of these products that we're looking at, because CHG is sometimes aggressive to mucosal tissue, some of these other products that are developed report a equal effectiveness as CHG without any untoward events to mucosal tissues or in the perineum. And it would give you a single product that you could bathe the entire patient instead of needing CHG for the areas that I mentioned, and then just soap and water in the perineum. And also some of these products are now reporting they have equal long bacteria reducing barriers over time. The duration is longer, equal to CHG. And so that's some of the things that we're studying now and observing. Some of these companies will do a proof of concept with some of our engagements. And so we're trying to watch the impact of extra perineum care on the reduction of caries, especially in cases where you have perforated bowels and other issues happening in that area to not contaminate the catheter itself.
Great insight, Rick. Any additional thoughts?
Those are the two main things that we focus on. I know the bundle talks about when we go into patients' rooms, we look at the bundle components, such as, do you have dependent loops in the line prior to going into the bag? And is the bag being kept off of the floor? And is the line being clipped to not the cover sheet, but to the fitted sheets, so that if you pull a fitted sheet, you're not disturbing that line? So we find a lot of issues with those bundle components, but especially in patients that are mobile, where you're trying to keep a line with no dependent loops when the patient is getting up and getting into a chair and sitting in chairs. It's so difficult that 24/7 to keep those bundle components in compliance. So that's one of the things that we talk with organizations about. But one of the most important that we find is keeping a low volume in the urimeter, especially if the patient is going to be transferred to physical therapy or to radiology, where they might sit and wait for the care or the treatment in PT or radiology for a period of time, that if their urimeter was already almost full, that it could cause some backup into that line. And you know the issues then with with the bio burden going back into the patient and causing an infection. So what we try to do is suggest, and we've seen them done very well, where when a transporter comes and there's a urinary catheter in place, that the transporter talks with a nurse and asks, I cannot transfer the patient until you drain the urimeter or the bag before I take the patient. And that's a very easy conversation because the nurse, we find, always has to be present at the time the patient is being released. And it's a checkoff process for the transporter. And that way, if a patient sits for a long duration in front of their next level of care, they won't get overflow of the bag or urimeter.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. I want to thank Rick Beaver for joining us. If you'd like to contact Rick with additional questions, we've posted his email address in the resource section of our podcast page. Next week, we'll continue our series by discussing the prevention of surgical site infections. Don't miss it. And please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. Also, please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, podcast on the latest in healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.